Our guest this evening is Professor Gardner Murphy, chairman of the Department of Psychology of City College, who makes a return appearance tonight to speak on the subject, freedom from fear. Professor Murphy.
Fear is a name for what we feel when we are threatened. Freedom from fear can come about in two ways, either through removal of the threat or through building within ourselves a means of defense against it. I must speak to you about both these methods of achieving freedom from fear. Now, we shall have to grant with candor that an ominous threat exists for us today, owing first to the unknown factors in the war, in the air, on the sea, and on land, owing secondly to our uncertainty about the kind of world we shall confront after the war. We live in a world of danger. How can the danger, especially the immediate military danger and the vague unknown economic danger of our changing era, be faced calmly, boldly, heroically? These are questions to which new and valuable answers have been achieved as a result of studies of wartime morale in the First World War, especially a study of the things which made men unafraid in the face of danger. Secondly, through the brilliant observations of Dr. Emilio Mira of Barcelona during the Spanish Civil War of 1936-38. And finally, through the astute and careful observations of British medical men in the last 3 years. We can say first, very positively, that danger is not so bad when there is something definite to do, a task assigned to which we can, with energy, carry out our reasonable part. For example, when we find some specific war task, however slight, that is our own. Secondly, that fear is rapidly overcome when we can actually see how our own reactions to the danger weaken or threaten that which is a threat to us. For example, when the workers in war industries grasp the full significance of their own work. Third, that the example of those who behave like men can make men even of cowards. These principles mean in practice that air raid wardens, the police, and others charged with public safety know that it is futile to tell people merely to stay still and keep calm. People must be provided an active, preferably constructive task, both in the daily round and in moments of acute danger. Secondly, and in the long run even more important, we know that if economic dislocation, confusion, or insecurity faces us during the war or after the armistice, it will be futile to tell people to keep calm, to avoid panic and despair. But if every man and woman has been assigned a constructive role, clearly based on an economic plan which gives security to all, we shall know what to do, and we shall not be afraid. And just as the heroes of Bataan and Corregidor, or of the torpedoed tankers off our shores, show us all today what bravery is like, so tomorrow our political and economic leaders can, through their replacing of the individualistic struggle for power by quiet devotion, personal sacrifice, personal heroism, set a pace in the post-war era which will sweep away your fears and mine. So much for physical fears and their annihilation. But the deeper study of men and women who are chronically afraid shows that in the origins of fear, it is not enough to study the response to physical threat, the threat of death, or of economic catastrophe. The state of being afraid is often the indirect reaction to a disturbed relationship between people. usually arising from pride, arrogance on the one hand, humiliation, inferiority on the other. Human society is full of snobbishness, the struggle for prestige or status, keeping up with the Joneses, thinking of one's own social, religious, or economic group as better than another. We A's don't associate with those B's. Look at the way they eat, talk, dress. Or within one group, one man lords it over another. The other, crestfallen, compensates for his hurt feelings by passing on the arrogant behavior to someone lower in the scale, or by aggressive outbursts which he himself does not understand. The members of groups thus divided by the struggle for personal status at the expense of their fellows tend to develop states of chronic fear or anxiety. In particular, children who feel rejected, not loved as much as their brothers and sisters, grow up in anxiety. This chronic anxiety may arise, in particular, after long years of despair, in which youth has been uncertain of the future, doubtful of ever achieving a respected place in the world. It is not in the least surprising that to many such individuals, war is a bewildering experience. The normal fears of wartime can become greatly aggravated by jealousies between social, religious, and economic groups in the armed forces, and by jealousies between civilians and those in uniform. Such tensions may look, on the surface, like sheer, willful aggressiveness. Underneath, they may be due largely to fear. In other words, everything that can be done by military and civilian leaders to enable our American religious, racial, and economic groups to understand and to respect one another serves directly to allay our fears and to give us strength. America has always been based on the principle of unity in diversity. E pluribus unum applies not only to the separate states, but to the racial, religious, economic components which make up our collective life. But as Ordway Teed pointed out last week, it is not only for the present, but for the future, that we must be able to plan and work together. The long, hard, complicated economic readjustment after the war is absolutely certain to throw us back into the old suspicions and fears unless we begin to plan now, democratically, and with our hearts in the task for a post-war society with jobs, security, and a decent standard of living for all. Men and women can be brave today if they know that they and their children, their own Ruth and John, their own Alf and Agatha, will be safe tomorrow. And if they know that the society of which their children are members will be based on mutual respect and collective planning for the full protection of the lowliest of its number. They will be brave if they know that the economic order of the post-war world is to be so justly and so solidly built that the fear of another war will have no basis. And if they know that the struggle, the agony of this moment, is an inevitable step in the realization of a good life for those who are near and dear to them and to all who share with them in the life of a great American family. William James, one of the most superb students of human nature, whose centennial we celebrate this year, wrote a remarkable essay entitled The Moral Equivalent of War. Men are really men, he wrote, if there is something strenuous, something heroic to live for. When the time comes that men can abolish war, it will be possible, he believed, to achieve heroism only by actively attacking all the enemies of humanity, the forces of ignorance, stupidity, disease, and in the name of common humanity, driving them from the face of the earth. If we fight this war not only to defeat our immediate enemies, but to advance a step in the struggle against all these enemies of humanity, the struggle for a just, decent, really human society based on understanding, we can conquer not only the fears of today, but the lurking anxieties of an unknown future.
Thank you, Professor Murphy. Ladies and gentlemen, you have just heard a talk by Professor Gardner Murphy, chairman of the Department of Psychology of City College, on the subject Freedom from Fear. This was another in the series of weekly broadcasts presented by your city station in cooperation with the College of the City of New York.